Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
As a mother-daughter duo, we're well aware that preteen and teenage girls are among the most concerned demographic groups when it comes to worrying about how their bodies look.
Our guest on this episode is Rutgers University psychology professor, Dr. Charlotte Markey, who's an expert in the psychology of body image. Dr. Markey is the author of several books on the topic, including her latest, The Body Image Book for Girls, Love Yourself, and Grow Up Fearless. Dr. Markey, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
At what age do girls begin to become aware of their physical appearance and perhaps self-conscious about it?
You know, it starts much earlier than most people realize. The first research study I ever did was looking at five-year-old girls, and we found that about 20% of them were expressing some dissatisfaction with their bodies. It really starts to take off, though, this concern during puberty, so during the tween and teen years.
And obviously, we are dealing with a whole new world here with quarantining and girls going to school online rather than in person. It was so surprising to read from a recent study from the University of Missouri where it said that girls have been so stressed out about weight gain that 40% of those surveyed would rather get COVID-19 than gain 25 pounds. Is that very surprising to you, or from your research, is that kind of what you would expect?
Yeah, sadly, I think it's not totally surprising. That research looked at young adults, so kind of college-aged, a little bit older. And part of what's going on, of course, is just that age group doesn't feel the same level of risk, and they aren't actually at the same level of risk in terms of life and death concerns regarding COVID. But it also is really a manifestation of just fat phobia in our society.
What would you advise people, parents of teens and preteen girls, if they have put on weight during the quarantine, what would you advise them to do to deal with this in a healthy way?
Well, talking to parents, it's really important that parents understand. I know it sounds cliche, but if they can't say anything nice, do not say anything at all about their kid's weight or their kid's appearance more generally, right? When parents make negative comments, even if it is something that seems like it's innocuous or trying to be sensitive, you know, like let's work on being healthier can be totally misinterpreted. And then girls decide, oh my gosh, I'm fat. My mom thinks I'm fat. And it can really set in motion sort of this chain reaction that's really troubling. So we really, really need parents to take a step back, realize these are unusual times, and we don't want to do anything to jeopardize our kids' relationships with food or how they feel about their bodies. Having said that, it's okay to change your grocery order and to have more fruits and vegetables showing up at home. So there are things we can do a little bit more covertly that may be healthy.
I'm also wondering, too, if you think that eating disorders are going to get caught earlier and treated earlier because parents are spending more time at home working from home and being with their kids who are schooling at home.
You know, eating disorders, there's some evidence so far during the pandemic that those who have had an eating disorder or who have had trouble with eating, maybe not a clinical disorder, are having a hard time because the quarantine has really changed people's food environments. It's changed people's social interactions. They don't necessarily get the social support they need. So it seems like the quarantine is actually a risk factor for those who are already struggling a little bit or in the process of recovery. Whether or not parents being around their kids will be able to catch anything sooner, I think that hasn't come up in any data I've seen yet. You know, the thing with eating disorders is that they can be really very sneaky disorders, and they're very deadly. There's a 10% fatality rate. So we do want to catch them early. We do want to get treatment for girls, but whether or not being around someone is going to make it obvious is not clear to me.
What are some of the signs that parents should look out for in terms of spotting an eating disorder?
Anytime time someone is making disparaging comments about their body, their appearance, is somewhat of a red flag. We've sort of normalized a lot of that conversation. Body image researchers call it fat talk, right? So that sort of like, I'm so fat. No, you're not. I'm so fat is really maladaptive. It's really unhealthy. So it may feel normal, but it's not okay. So that's like a sort of initial red flag where you'd want to say like, okay, you know, we're not doing this. And then any kind of, you know, restriction around food or issues of guilt around food are initial flags too. And it's not to say that these things are indicative of a disorder, but they are indicative of a concern or an unhealthy relationship with food and one's body that could then ultimately manifest as a disorder someday.
If parents are concerned that their kid may be going in that direction and maybe making too many comments about their body or comparing themselves to their friends or celebrities, would you suggest that maybe they have their child talk to a psychologist or a counselor online, since teletherapy is becoming more normal and it's not such a big deal like taking them to an in-person appointment?
Yeah, I think some teletherapy right now could be great. We probably all need teletherapy right now.
Oh my God, isn't that the truth? Yeah.
We should all just sign up. It should be a public service.
Let's have a group class with the whole country.
That'll remove the stigma very quickly.
That's right. Okay, let's get rid of the stigma once and for all. Yeah, I think it can be a great idea. You want to make sure if you're connecting, especially a relatively young child who might feel, you know, kind of awkward in a new setting, like a therapeutic setting, setting them up with someone who has experience dealing with eating disorders and body image issues, not just like a general adolescent therapist, because that really can make a difference in terms of how these issues are approached. But yeah, I mean, telehealth, teletherapy, they may be some of the few good things that emerge from the pandemic, I think. They've really gone mainstream.
Going back to what you said a minute ago, you were talking about how the conversation starts maybe with a girl saying, oh, I'm so fat. And the parent says, no, you're not. And the girl says, I'm so fat. And then it goes back and forth.
Yeah.
And you said not to get into that back and forth thing, but what can you say as a parent, or how can you listen? What's the important thing to do when that conversation begins?
It's tricky. I know. I have my own teenage daughter. And fortunately, I have not heard that one yet. I know how hard it is to just talk to teenagers sometimes, because anything you say can be misperceived. And we often feel as parents like we're walking on eggshells, I think. But the main thing I think to get across is, yes, you know, how girls feel, you don't want to invalidate that. So you want to say, I'm sorry you feel that way. That's not what I'm seeing. And what's really most important for you to understand is that is just, you know, your appearance is just one very minor part of who you are. And I love you for so many other reasons. And to really make sure that girls understand that their value is not just in their appearance. So to really kind of have this more expansive conversation, pivot away from the I'm so fat, not in an invalidating way, but in a way that lets girls know that they're loved unconditionally.
Since parents of teenagers didn't grow up with the wild west of social media that we all have, we're all dealing with right now, how can they help their kids understand it? I can just see, after a conversation going back and forth with your parent about whether or not you feel fat or not, that social media probably comes into that conversation at some point, and the kids can say to their parents, hey, you don't understand what I'm seeing every day. People are actually a lot skinnier than me.
Yeah, social media is something I think all parents are concerned about, because like you said, we didn't grow up with it and we kind of don't know exactly what to make of it or even how to completely use it. But you know, it's a good way to have a conversation about these issues more generally. I think kids somewhat expect that you're going to ask or talk about social media use. And so you can begin with like, who are you following? What are you doing on social media? And then talk about, well, why are you following that celebrity? What is that about? What are you learning from this group or this person? There's a lot of positive influences on social media too. And in particular, in terms of body image, there's a whole body positivity movement on social media. And so girls may not be aware of that, but we can try to get them moving in that direction. And then social media ceases to be, I think, quite the same sort of negative influence. So, you know, I think as opposed to just being afraid of social media, we want to try to talk about it, try to use it as a way to just talk about issues that can be hard.
We love having you as part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. We know a lot of you want to be your own boss or already operate your own business. That's why we want you to know about Shopify.
Hear that? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify and the moment another business dream becomes reality.
Shopify puts you in control of every sale channel. So whether you're selling satin sheets from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering organic olive oil on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered.
Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle.
And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers.
Once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere.
What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 170 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nobody, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/nobody to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/nobody.
What should we be telling the teenagers in our lives about altering physical appearances on social media in order to look flawless?
That's a tricky one because most people do this, right? So, you know, social comparison comes in here. And if everyone else is doing it, it's hard to tell your own kid, yeah, you know, you shouldn't do that on principle. And yet I think it's worth suggesting that, you know, that's silly. Why are you going to spend all this time editing your photo? Be proud of who you are and how you look, and don't worry about what other people think so much, right? It's not to say that saying these things that are kind of idealistic are going to sink in or girls are going to internalize them immediately. But as parents, as adults in girls' lives, we want to be the idealists sort of on their behalf. We want to suggest some of these things that hopefully they gradually come to embrace and figure out, hey, you're kind of right about that. Maybe this doesn't matter that much.
What would you suggest that parents do if their child has been fat shamed by somebody else? Like, it's already happened. It's not just the girl thinking that they're fat. It's they've been told this by their peers.
Yeah, this is really, really unfortunate and just heartbreaking when this happens, especially among young kids, but really among any of us. We all want to feel accepted by other people. And, you know, any kind of bullying, it's really a form of bullying. It just can be so devastating. And, you know, I think that this is then, if this has already happened, this is probably a good sign that you want to then connect with a therapist. Like, don't take this on all on your own as a parent, because this is already a problem. If the kid is already upset, your child is already upset about this, and that's going to be a lot to have to work up against. So, you know, as a parent, I think, you know, you don't want to say things like, oh, well, I can't believe she called you that. You know, she's pretty chubby herself. Like, don't get in the dirt. It's tempting as a parent to do that, I think, sometimes, because we just want to defend our own children. But, you know, I think it's more important, again, to stress sort of a different value system, right? That, you know what? Who cares what they think? these are all the things that are really wonderful about you. You have a great sense of humor. You're doing really well in math this year. I can't wait to see you in the school play. You know, you have some great friends who really love you. And there's always going to be someone out there, you know, who isn't your good friend. Like, you can't please all the people all the time. So this is like a life lesson. You can't make everyone happy. Not everyone's going to be your friend. Try to move past it.
What differences do you see in the body issues preteen and teenage boys have as compared with girls in the same age group?
It's funny you should ask that. I am currently writing the body image book for boys. So it will be out in another, I guess, year and a half by the time all is said and done. And it's interesting because boys have concerns, but they're not the same concerns as girls, really. You know, boys are really much more concerned in looking like an adult man with lots of muscles. And so that leads them to a different set of problematic behaviors. They're more likely to engage in compulsive exercise and weightlifting and use and abuse supplements and even at the extreme steroids. So those are not problems that girls tend to have. They can be really serious. And boys will still often have some of the unfortunate cognitions and worries that girls have. That I'm not good enough. I don't look the way I want to look. I'm not happy with myself. Those kinds of cognitions are there, but the behavioral manifestation of them is often very different.
Should parents handle the issues that boys have in the same way that they do girls?
I mean, to a certain extent, we want to try to communicate. We want to open up lines of dialogue about these issues. The unfortunate thing is when boys do turn to supplements or compulsive weightlifting, these sorts of things, parents don't often pick up on this as problematic because it looks like a health behavior. You know, like I'm taking protein and I'm exercising. And so parents think, oh, look how healthy he's getting. But it's, you know, it's not healthy if it's like consuming all this mental space and creating this source of worry. And so, you know, if parents are realizing that this is a stressor for their son, then yeah, they want to talk to him. Yes, therapy may be an option. And just trying to, you know, at least suggest, like, you don't have to, you know, do all of this. You don't have to keep going to the gym, or, you know, who cares if your friends work out twice a day? That seems silly. I want to make sure that you're getting enough time to do your homework, or, you know, again, we value you for all these other things. And it's not just about your muscles or how you look.
What though can a parent say if they are concerned about a preteen or a teenager who is maybe during the quarantine eating a quart of ice cream every day, or engaging in otherwise unhealthy eating habits out of boredom or whatever it might be? Because I know you say it's really a fine line to walk in terms of what you actually say. You don't want to say the wrong thing, but you also don't want them to engage in behaviors that are going to cause maybe a large weight gain and trouble and comments down the line from others.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you're on a tightrope here. And I am sympathetic, and I feel it in my own household from time to time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this is why sometimes my advice is really nuanced, because, you know, parenting is so humbling. It's easy to have like really clear cut advice, and then you actually try to implement that, and you're like, oh God, this is actually much more murky and complicated in real life.
Yeah, that didn't work.
that was a great idea, but that didn't work at all. So, you know, my best advice as far as that goes is if they're eating a whole bunch of ice cream, you know, just don't have the ice cream in the house and don't make a big deal about it. You know, the thing is, food is an important part of our lives forever. We are going to be eating forever, and food is not the enemy. But I mean, I do this for myself, and I think I have a pretty solid body image in middle age. And if I know I'm going to eat or drink a ton of something, then I just stop buying it and I treat it as more of a treat if I'm out somewhere. Well, not that I'm out somewhere often nowadays, but,
but if you were to go out somewhere.
Yeah. Right. If I was to go out to dinner, you know, and I would get ice cream for dessert, you know, and I think if you just kind of keep it in that framework, it's easier as an adult just to appreciate what you're doing. And when you're managing the groceries for a household, I think you definitely don't want to say like, hey, you've been eating so much ice cream, I'm not going to buy it anymore. Because mm-hmm. that's like, you know, a really explicit message you don't want to send.
Yeah.
And so much of this too must be related to the fact that our routines have been so messed up by this, that even though we normally wouldn't go and get that pint of ice cream at 1 o'clock, the kids aren't at school. So they have time to do that. And maybe once everybody gets really into their new routine, maybe that kind of behavior will stop.
Yes. So much of this is situational. And, you know, another way to frame it or to think about it is we are living through a historic moment. This is a global pandemic. And for some people, they may feel helped by drinking more wine. That's not for kids, of course, but having more ice cream, you know, and if these are coping mechanisms that people find helpful, I mean, maybe it's just not that big a deal, right?
Like, right, right.
In the scheme of things, who cares, right? If that helps you stay home and stay safe, like, well, all right. Like, maybe we should just look at it that way more often. It's just not, you know, it's not the end of the world to eat more ice cream. We've never bought soda really in my house. And in the last few months, I don't really know how it started, but we've started buying soda sometimes. And it's not even always diet. It's like, and then, you know, my kids are both teenagers and they'll be like, oh my God, we have Dr. Pepper in the house. And I'm like, yep, go for it.
It's just a way to treat yourself too. It's,
yeah.
It's one thing you have control over is that you can buy the soda. You know, so much is out of our control, but that's one thing that would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know, and I've said, like, try to just, you know, keep it to one a day. This isn't a habit that I plan on us maintaining forever. But yeah, like I felt as a parent, like there's so little like I can do to bring my children joy right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. Laura touched on something interesting when she talked about the control. And I'm wondering how much do eating disorders relate to the need to feel in control of some aspect of our lives?
Oftentimes, very much so. And this is part of why, as parents, we have to be really careful, because if we start trying to take really overt, explicit control of our kids' eating behaviors because we're worried about them, they're going to push back and we're going to create a bigger problem, because we're going to, you know, it's almost like if they start eating a lot of ice cream and we start saying, you can't have that ice cream, right? Especially among teenagers, it's very likely they're going to say, oh yeah, I'm going to have that ice cream.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it becomes like this thing, this control thing. It's not even about the ice cream always. So that's why, you know, it's important, I think, to be thoughtful and careful as parents. And we all make mistakes, though. You know, this is all I've been studying professionally for almost 25 years. And I still have definitely said things I know I shouldn't.
But you're human.
Right. We're all human. So, and I raise that mostly to say that, you know, if you say the wrong thing as a parent, that's okay, because you're human. And it's okay to circle back the next day and say, like, you know, I really shouldn't have said anything about whatever, about the ice cream. I'm really glad you're enjoying it. I know that a lot sucks right now. And it's really not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, try to neutralize the, are you really eating more ice cream?
Yeah, right.
You can return to it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me that eating disorders seem to be even more out of control now, because I would think that with kids not going to school in person, they wouldn't have quite the same concerns. And by doing Zoom every day, you only have to worry about, you know, really just up. So why do you think that they are so concerned when, if anything, less of their body is being seen?
Well, less of their body is being seen, but think about it. Most people who develop an eating disorder, it's not really that they're necessarily overweight or, you know, that people are giving them negative feedback about how they look, right? They just feel that. They have decided that. And most often they have a very distorted sense of how they look. So it's not all about sort of the social feedback that's driving the disorder. But, you know, we've just talked about control, and many of us feel really a loss of control right now. And so if you already are kind of on the precipice of an eating disorder, or just have really maladaptive eating habits, and then all of a sudden all this control is stripped away, that can, I think, leave people in a free fall.
What advice do you have for parents about incorporating exercise into the virtual school day?
It's tough because I'm finding with kids in a virtual school day that it's exhausting. So it's completely sedentary, but it's still exhausting.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah, so it's a dilemma. And yet, you know, exercise is like the cheapest, safest health intervention that exists. As long as it's not compulsive or obligatory exercise, any sort of reasonable exercise is just so good for our mental and physical health. And it even has been shown to help people attend better to new information. So in terms of being in a learning environment, kids are going to be able to focus on schoolwork better, it seems, if they're getting some exercise. So I think setting some expectation of during lunchtime, you have to go walk the dog around the block, or, you know, you haven't done anything today, why don't you go ride your bike with a friend? You can wear masks. You know, trying to sort of just make it clear that there's some expectation. You don't want to have to struggle and fight day after day with kids about anything right now.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think it's really beneficial too that we try and encourage a positive mindset in kids as early as possible. Because I read somebody say that when we're in a negative mindset, it really all comes down to the size of our genes.
Yeah. And you know, exercise is good no matter what. Right? If we're in a quarantine, if we're young, if we're old, there's just everyone needs to, or hopefully will at some point in their life, find something they like to do, dancing, running, biking, playing a sport, and they should do it. So there's lots of reasons to encourage this among our kids. And we definitely should not frame it in terms of weight. We want to frame it in terms of just find something you like, just do it because it's so good for you. Do it because it's an avenue for some social interaction. You know, I know a lot of the adults I know look forward to exercising as a way to either go out, walk with their partners, or see a friend, or, you know, it's a safe way in many cities and situations to be social. So there's so many good things about exercise.
I know you say dieting is never the answer for preteen and teenage girls, even if their weight is a concern. Why is that?
The most basic practical level, dieting doesn't work. So we just have decades now of research suggesting that dieting as it's traditionally conceptualized is more likely to lead to weight gain than weight loss across time. So if someone starts a diet, chances are a year later they will weigh more than they do when they start that diet.
Wow. Yeah,
I know. It's really kind of a striking, like it almost feels like the secret from weight science that just doesn't get into the general public because there's so many plans and prescriptions and that are making money, you know, that's the louder voice in terms of what the public hears. But they're, practically speaking, they're not going to work. And then they also set us up to have a really maladaptive relationship with food because they almost always are about cutting out carbs or not eating during certain times or, you know, not eating fat or, you know, it's about different forms of restriction and it's not personalized. So we're much better served if we can try to understand what we like, what we feel we need, and then, you know, think about what we can do that's healthy, that makes sense for us. And it, you know, for me, it would never be cutting out carbs, mm-hmm. right? Uh-huh. Or cutting out any food.
Me neither. I'm with you.
So, you know, it's then, you know, for me, what is healthier is just to make sure I don't go overboard and
moderation,
you know, and use moderation. Exercise as well.
And right. You know, I mean, exercise, it's kind of like what your grandmother would have told you, right? Like exercise and moderation in what you eat. And it's usually, if you try to make it more complicated than that, it's not going to stick. So that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And Dr. Markey, as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So at the end of each episode, we ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what did nobody tell you about body image that you wish you knew before you became a world-leading expert in body image research?
You know, it's sort of ironic because I've written more than one book now about body image. Obviously, I think it's an important topic, but at the end of the day, what I actually want people to do is think less about their bodies. So I wish someone had told me that no one is going to be your friend or like you, and your life is not going to be perfect, and there's so much that is not dependent on the size or the shape of your body, mm-hmm. but all those other parts of you matter more.
And Doctor, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
The book has a webpage, so you can go to thebodyimagebookforgirls.com. I am on Twitter at @char_Markey, CHAR_MARKEY. And I'm also on Instagram at the same name and Facebook at Dr. Charlotte Markey. I blog and write for Psychology Today and U.S. News and World Report pretty regularly. So if you just Google Charlotte Markey, you'll find all kinds of stuff, including the latest book.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. This has been really enlightening.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure. Yeah, I love what you're doing with this show.
Especially as a mother-daughter duo, I mean, couldn't be a more interesting topic for us. So
Exactly. Hopefully well, you have the book, right? You guys can read it together
or something. Seriously, fun activity.
Our thanks to Dr. Charlotte Markey. Again, her latest book is called The Body Image Book for Girls, Love Yourself and Grow Up Fearless. And again, the website for the book is thebodyimagebookforgirls.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.